Welcome to hour two of the anti-media. I'm Jake Anderson. I should have a good show tonight. We have a few cool journalists that are going to call in. My co-host DB should be calling in as usual. I'm going to see if Skype accommodates me technologically. I've been busy as a bee this week. Really, I actually haven't been paying much attention to politics because I'm working on a Kickstarter campaign for a documentary that I'm going to briefly pitch here. I don't know if you guys have heard of the case of Elisa Lam. She was a girl who died on a hotel roof in 2012, and there's all kinds of theories on what happened to her. And so we're making a documentary about it, and we're trying to raise some funds for it. So if you guys have heard about the documentary, or if you've heard about the case, and you're interested in it and you want to help support us, you know, go to Kickstarter and just look up Elisa Lam. And trying to get to the bottom. Some people think it was murder. Some people think it was psychiatric breakdown. Some people even think paranormal activity was involved. This hotel that she was staying at is like The Shining. So there's all kinds of angles to this. And exciting, but stressful. It's hard to raise money. I hate asking people for money. But, you know, that's kind of the way of the beast these days. I mean, it's what keeps this world running. And I got a DB trying to call in here. I'm going to try and add him here. But, as usual, it's not letting me add someone. Oh, it looks like he called in the old-fashioned way. So, yeah, we, you know, politically, there's, you know, the main thing everyone is talking about right now is this Jeff Sessions bullshit, which is, you know, as usual, just a bunch of distractions. But, I'd actually like to get DB's opinion on this. DB, are you with us in spirit?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. Did you call in by phone?
No, I didn't. I actually got my laptop up and running just for you.
Perfect. Claire is trying. Oh, thank you, buddy. I appreciate that. Always can't go a week without your opinion. Let's see. I'm trying to get Claire. Claire wants someone to call in. And as of course, the moment the show starts is the time to do this. But yeah, I mean, I think that Jeff Sessions I think this is a bit of a psyop right now. What's your take on what's going on with this, you know, obviously, you know, kind of a politically motivated takedown here?
I mean, here's the thing. Everybody knows who Sessions was about to go after. So there's going to be intense pushback on him keeping his job because he's going to go after these elite rings. So, you know, they're stuck in a conundrum here where there's some seriously deranged people that will stop at nothing to remain free and not go to jail for their crimes. And at this point, it's kind of weighing their ability to do mass casualty attacks via terrorism, Jake. I really think that's what it boils down to now. The current leadership is the military. I hope everybody has seen that that's true. And they're now weighing the prospects of an all-out war against what we could call the old blood families, I believe.
Right. So you think there's, I mean, you still think that this is a coup versus a soft coup, basically.
Well, it was soft, but it can't remain that way because now with them threatening to go after the powers they just overthrew with the soft coup via Sessions and actually making these people go to jail, or worse, maybe a lot of these people are possibly going to be executed because of their crimes. I mean, it's true.
There's no way they're going to be executing people, man.
I don't know, man. If it came out with video proof of people
you're talking about the pedophile rings at this point.
Right. I mean, if that video proof came out, I don't think we're too far gone as a society, ethically and morally, that we would probably call for, you know, lethal injection for those people.
Man, I'm so waiting for that evidence to come down. Instead, we're getting just these dispatches of Jeff Sessions, having a hot dog with a Russian ambassador a year ago. I just,
It's, you know, yeah,
I don't know
man.
why are they preserving this intelligence?
Well, they keep it around for blackmail purposes just so they can use it at some later date. I mean,
Right.
they even,
But
you know, they
why
pulled Jill
is
Stein at.
we're about to be joined by journalist Claire Burnish. Maybe she has an opinion on it. Oh, he's offline. He's gotta get back online here.
Yeah, I mean, they're railroading every nationalist movement right now, Jake. You're seeing Marine Le Pen in France has now been stripped of her diplomatic immunity because she posted graphic pictures of Daesh setting prisoners on fire, and that when it went against some inane morality code that doesn't even really exist in France. I mean, that's where we're at right now. They're pulling out all the stops because the soft coup became a hard coup, and they said they were going to go after certain people.
We're joined now by journalist extraordinaire Claire Burnish. Claire, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, I'm tired and weary of my existence, quite frankly. But what's new? Happy belated birthday.
Thank you.
So, what's your take? I want to get into, my theory is that all this political, maneuvering is always just covering up larger issues, larger corruptions, as always. But we want to get into that. But first, what's your take on kind of this newest kind of political assassination here that's under the auspices of proving a link with Russia, which would what prove that what WikiLeaks leaked isn't valid? I still don't really know the point of proving that Russia was involved in that, but whatever. What do you have a take on it?
Yeah, I think that this is a major distraction. If you consider the way that politicians, world leaders have to interact. They have to interact with other world leaders, which means they have to interact with the governments of those world leaders. So for a potential incoming administration to be in contact with another world power that's essentially on the same level as us is not that unusual. I don't know that we'll ever find out the content of the calls, but I think that the fact that there was content or contact between the two parties has been made a huge issue that it doesn't need to necessarily be. Also, remember that both President Trump and his administration, a lot of people in his administration, have business dealings with people in Russia. So there would be a number of reasons for these people to be in contact.
Yeah, I mean it's a little suspicious that they were meeting right at the peak of the Russian sanctions. But what
Yes.
until they have proof of it, shut the hell up. I mean, that's the way I look at it.
But are we going to dig into the other side then? Because the other side's equally, if not more so, guilty, and not only with Russia, but with most of the monarchies of the Middle East, who are
I agree.
inherently more dangerous to our way of life, by the way, than Russia would ever be.
I agree. The Bush, 8 years of Bush, and then 8 years of Obama got us a perpetual war with the deep state raking in money from defense contractors, and that was the old world order that I think is being threatened right now, and I think that's why you're seeing this pushback against Trump. I mean, Trump's not making it easy. I mean, or Trump's making it easy, quite frankly, for this pushback because he has a holds a press conference in which he sounds like a drunk toddler, walking around. He's making it easy for him, but I still think that this is the deep state operating. It'll be interesting to see if they're able to take him down one at a time here.
But he's
Well,
not solo. He has a massive backing behind him. If you really look into who's backing Trump, it's pretty much Israel. So that's what's going to happen. It's going to blow up into this major, massive ordeal if they really try to pick him apart.
okay, if Israel is backing him, then why is he so non-committal about the one state, two state solution?
Because it's probably just going to be one state really soon, as messed up as that sounds.
Right.
I thought he kind of came out against the two-state solution a while back.
He didn't really make a firm he probably doesn't even know what they mean, but he didn't make a firm answer either way, so
Well, it's inevitable unless the entire world decides to gang up on one country because the other side has no weapons, so.
right. Okay. Well, there's larger issues going on right now, and so I mean, it's always seductive to get wrapped up into the news cycle and what they want you to focus on. And meanwhile, there's all these other stories going on, including I was watching the live feed of Standing Rock last week when they had, federal agents going in there with caterpillars and basically starting the process of mowing the land down and kicking people out. And I teared up at one point. It just depressed the hell out of me. And so I kind of want to talk about that for a little bit. And Claire, I know you've been covering that, perpetually throughout it. So what are your thoughts on kind of where we're at with, that whole issue and whether there's still a chance that we could resist?
I believe firmly that Standing Rock and Dakota Access sparked a movement, like a worldwide movement, to get to cleaner energy and also to start paying attention to indigenous rights. There are a lot of good benefits that came out of Standing Rock, but stopping the pipeline is not one of them, and I can't see how it possibly could be. The movement was kind of doomed from the start, unfortunately, due to a lot of corruption behind the scenes that I think people are reluctant to accept. Whenever you have a concentration of power in a government, in any setting, whether it's a national setting like the US or a small setting like a tribe, and incidentally, tribal government was originally arranged by the US government to be favorable to it. So tribal government is not a natural extension of traditional practices. But when you have this concentration of power, it's almost a guarantee that somebody is going to become intoxicated by that power and will end up corrupt. And essentially, that's what happened in this case. Not the movement, but there were certain key members of the tribal council and leadership who perhaps gained from the movement for a time, but the
Oh.
pipeline was always sort of meant to go through, like it was always going to happen.
Oh.
There's a lot of really nastiness, real nastiness behind the scenes.
Is this some of the shit that you weren't able to talk about when you first got back?
Yeah, it is.
Nice. We're finally getting the juicy stuff.
Yeah, and being in Standing Rock, I was only there for a week, which, people were there the entire duration, or they were there for months or on and off. I was only there for a week, but my 1 week impression there was very strong, and it was in December. I heard members of the Standing Rock Sioux discuss like how tribal council was corrupt or how leadership was corrupt. I've heard people who were non-native water protectors camped out there for months talk about how there's corruption, or this money doesn't seem to be going for what it should be. Again, and I, the reluctance to talk about this has to do with making the movement look bad.
Right.
It should not. It should never make the movement look bad. There were plenty, thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of legitimate water protectors around the world coming together for this cause. It's not those people.
And there's corruption in pretty much every group. Any hierarchical
Exactly.
group is going to have corruption in it.
It's a human condition.
Yeah.
It's not a condition, people are like, well, how dare you slander the tribe that way? It's not like that. It's individuals. When you look at humans as individuals, people are capable of being corrupted, and that appears to be what happened in this case. We now have the camps cleared out completely, almost completely, of people. Even the way that that went about seemed a little suspicious. There was an effort at the main camp, Ocheti Shekoi, to get the campground cleaned up. Water protectors were working around the clock in shifts to get everything cleaned up, and there were a bunch of nasty propagandic reports that came out that said that, these trash people were looking for dead bodies and stuff. But what they forget is that these the people working for the refuse companies who said this, the refuse companies are in these small towns in the area. And these small towns have been just notoriously bad for coming down on water protectors and activists and journalists. There have been slashed tires and broken windows and threats made and all sorts of things. So for them to say that isn't actually the truth. They're just like, wow, these people suck. We want them out of our area, and this is what we're looking for. So there has been a lot of negative propaganda coming out of Standing Rock that is simply not true.
Yeah. It certainly looked like a looked pretty messy there. I mean, not to castigate, you know, I mean, my room is messy too, so I'm not going to judge other people on that, but it kind of looked
mess, but it did look like that. But some of the pictures were used incorrectly. Some of them were from the dump, some of them were from certain areas. I mean, the problem is the police have such quash on information coming out of there. Like, it's pretty well known they're using Stingray and a bunch of other things to throttle information. Yes, there was a lot of trash, but what has been misrepresented is that people just up and left. Some people did have to leave in the blizzard and left things behind, but the people who stayed, who always intended to stay, were working on cleaning it up. Morton County made it very difficult for any of the trash to be removed from the area during the time that the camp was in full, you know, in full swing.
I'm sure there was. I shouldn't even have brought that up. It's really not even an issue.
No, it's actually necessary to bring up the truth in the matter, because that was really a negative campaign that was meant to smear the movement, and it shouldn't have come about. It's unfortunate, but I guess it's to be expected. I think that there are a lot of lessons to be learned from Standing Rock in the days to come. You know, there are a lot of pipelines that have been approved, and many of them are controversial. But I think that what went wrong in Standing Rock, and perhaps why it essentially failed, those lessons can be taken to these other fights.
Yeah, there's a burgeoning, well, not burgeoning, there's been obviously an environmental movement going on for a while, but I think the kind of anti-science platform that Trump and his people have rolled out, you know, whether or not you support the EPA or not, whether or not you're bummed out that they're cutting it by a fourth, the general environmental justice platform that the Trump administration puts forth is going to strengthen the movement, you know, the environmental movement, and we're gonna come to a head again, and these other pipelines are gonna be protested against, and you know, hopefully we can bring that energy into. I mean, obviously it's about more than just the environment, but you know, that's one issue. I mean, that pipeline could poison the water supply for, you know, thousands of people, and you know, it's,
well, Dakota Access alone could actually contaminate the drinking water supply of 18 million people.
Right, 18 million. Yeah, so more than a few there. But yeah, I mean, we've been talking for a while about whether it's a transferable movement, you know, whether, you know, because there's so many issues tied up there in that, you know, indigenous rights and all that, you know, there's so many issues tied up that it seems to me there's a real big danger of the groups, of different groups not being able to coalesce and fight what's going to be a very, you know, draconian government. I mean, Trump is, you know, he's not going to back down from anything he wants ever. So, you know, when we go up against anything, any of these pipelines are going to be, you know, have, you know, corporatist backing all the way. And it'll be interesting to try and get it. You see your friend Miko. I'm trying to figure out how to.
The thing with these pipelines, Dakota Access set the precedent in order to get Dakota Access to be a profitable pipeline. It was considered redundant by the industry, virtually unnecessary. But Energy Transfer Partners lobbied really hard to get to get it approved. And one of the things that the people, politicians like Rick Perry, and there are a number behind the scenes, actually worked to ensure what happened, is that crude oil, unrefined crude oil, could be exported for profit. There had been a ban in place since the 70s that prevented unrefined crude from being exported. And I think people didn't realize how big of a deal that was. And with the omnibus spending bill in 2015, maybe 2016, this provision lifting the ban on exports actually provided the impetus for all these pipelines to suddenly be profitable, even if they're fleeting and temporary and redundant and excessive. So there's an incentive for these companies, these big oil companies and these pipeline construction companies, there's a huge incentive for them to construct these pipelines no matter what. Dakota Access at first claimed that it was going to help make America energy independent, but it's basically an outright lie. And that's the same with a lot of these. So I think that's necessary that people remember that too.
Right. There's that issue, obviously. What other issues do you think are kind of going on behind the scenes here that are being, we're being distracted from with these kind of political stunts? You know, I feel like there's this whole, you know, artifice of news. It's the news cycle, you know, Huffington Post plays into it, CNN, Politico. There's like this, you know, entourage of media that's making us look one way. And, you know, sometimes there's a very legitimate reason to be looking in that direction. But other times, to me, it seems like it's a, you know, a misdirect to get us to not talk about other things. And you know, but right now there's so much going on that it's hard to know what the next play is. And I know, you know, DB, I know you're always looking down the road, down the you know, at what the next play is. But I mean, you think there's a, you know, a giant purge coming in the government, you know. How, you know, Claire, what do you think the next kind of big issue that's being distracted, that we're being distracted from right now?
I mean, it's up for debate. There are so many things going on right now. There seems to be a bit of a deep state coup. We have a bunch of dead Russian ambassadors in a very short period of time.
Right.
There are all sorts of interesting little details going on. I would say that one of the biggest actually hit headlines today, and that was that Bank of America predicted essentially the economic collapse will be coming in the second half of 2017. And that's a big deal. It's not the only, there are so many things going on right now, it's hard to say that anything is more important than anything else, but an economic collapse far greater than the size we saw in 2008 is going to be a big deal.
Yeah, it'll be followed by, well, they'll never be able to get something that'll make the Second Amendment go away before that. So that creates a problem where there's people that are really hungry and they have a lot of guns. And so people that don't are just basically shit out of luck, unfortunately.
That's cheerful. Thank you for that.
Yes, I'm always a bringer of good news.
Can always count on you for
one thing. I do want to say is the shakeup's happening now, though. I don't know if you guys are aware of the DOJ slush fund that's now being dismantled by the GOP and how that was funding leftist terrorist groups basically worldwide. And that's being destroyed. I mean, that was established in 76. And who was in during that time? You know, so it makes a lot of sense that there was a coup back then right after Richard Milhouse 8-1 for the team, and now it's coming home to roost that the military is like, wait a minute, these people are insane and they're going to drag us into a world war, and it's us or them, and it's come down to that. So the coup is real, man. It's happening. Fox News, you can look it up right now. I mean, the DOJ slush fund discretionary budget up to $30 billion that went where? Nowhere. $30 billion a year that went to who knows where.
When you say these are leftist groups, I mean, are you saying, I mean, obviously this has been going on for a while, so you say that both Republican and Democratic administrations, are you saying
Yes.
the deep state's been using the leftist groups?
Yes, because Venezuela is happening on purpose. Brazil is happening on purpose. And Argentina happened on purpose, and they were able to bring their country back from almost death. So these things are happening worldwide. It's what you do is you install the communist mindset, and then you basically tell the youth to take what's rightfully theirs from the older generation, and you start rebel groups. It's the simplest of terms to say it's just economic worldwide.
Yeah, well, this is such an unwritten history. It almost blows my mind that the phrase deep state's becoming very popular right now. Unfortunately, it's kind of refers to this kind of a nebulous. It's virtually impossible to describe in a single sentence, much less. It's hard to describe. I mean, it's just this kind of synergy of private
It's
companies, government agencies.
the underpinning of what happens in the world. It's the underpinning of foreign policy, of military policy, of the way that countries relate to each other and everything else. And there is a web, like a network, of the more connected and intelligence-minded officials in the world who kind of run things from behind the scenes. I think that people make the mistake of calling it like a puppet show. Like the deep state acts as puppet masters, and to a degree, that's true, but it's more subtle than that a lot of times, and that's where people go wrong with that whole description.
And it's
Yeah,
not a conspiracy theory, Jake. It's a conspiracy reality. The
right.
people at the upper echelons conspire with each other to create more wealth for themselves, therefore more control, more power, less for us, and eventually some kind of grid will go into place where if you don't participate in their system, you don't participate in the economy. And then what do you do?
Yeah, when I wrote about it, I said basically it's everything that you had thought the New World Order is, but it's, real, and it's doesn't necessarily involve reptilians or shapeshifters. It's just the people who run the world who want to consolidate wealth. And, it's crazy to think that they're not doing that. Of course, people in power are consolidating power, consolidating wealth, because they want to keep power. This goes back to the beginning of human civilization.
And keep in mind, the most powerful people in the world inherited their power. Therefore, they never had a human experience like me and you. They really more or less consider us cattle.
Yeah, and there's a lot of cattle right now. So, 8 billion.
If
God.
you think about it, what's really happening on every level, it really includes nearly every policy that's going on right now in many of the Western governments. We're seeing kind of, the playing out of the downfall of empire, with the US essentially in decline and other big powers vying for the position. And when we have that happen, we have the implementation of fascism and everything else. We have fascistic policy and authoritarianism. All of this stuff is happening. We're seeing that. So, whereas the news maybe a year ago, we could say, hey, we're being distracted from this. At this point, there's kind of a double weaving of the narrative. Like we have this constant bombardment of insane news on the surface, but we also have this underpinning what's really going on the whole time. So
Yeah.
whereas something might have been more important than the other thing in a different setting, right now it's everything is important. How do we focus?
It's this whole shadow. I mean, it really is a shadow. It's not even one government. It's a it, you know it's a it's God, what is it? It's this. It's a shadow nexus of special interests that are keeping the world the way it is. And it unfortunately we don't really have a mechanism by which to expose it because, or maybe we do. I mean, I guess it kind of is being exposed right now, but there doesn't really seem to be a way to take them down. I mean, I guess they're going to try. I think that is probably going to lead to
Civil War.
civil war of some kind. But here's the sad thing about that is no one's going to know why there's a civil war. It's going to be blamed on
Yes, they will. Only like 40 to 50 million people. The rest are just going to be run like chickens with their heads cut off.
Yeah, some people will know, but yeah, the rest of them are going to think that, they're whatever they play off in the news is the reason, is going to be the reason. And it really bothers me that there's this whole faux history that's playing out that people have no idea about. And
Well, think about it. Last month was Black History Month, and they're parading around Abraham Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln. Do people know that he was not what he seemed he was? I mean, do people know the real history of the man? He was first and foremost, he was a Republican, and secondly, what he wanted to do after the war was he wanted to actually send all of the American blacks to Liberia. And then he got assassinated. So that plan only went through to, I don't know, 10% fruition. And if you ever study anything about Liberia, you'll notice they use the US dollar. They want to be the 51st state. They want to come back to the Union and they won't let them. And that's what the whole Ebola thing was about. That's where it started. They shut them up real quick. So people, you're right, Jake. Nobody knows any of our history in this country. We see stuff like Ken Burns does these documentaries. We think we know what we're looking at, but we don't.
Yeah, Ken Burns is a. I'm sure he's a sweet man. His documentaries, they're just kind of like. These kind of bloated, emotional tributes to fake history. I don't know. But isn't
Imagine
that,
when,
isn't.
I was just going
Sorry.
to say really quickly, imagine if they can get the far extreme left riled up so much that they believe Russia's an enemy, and then they can get a war going with Russia where a half of the country is okay with it. Like,
Well, I think that's what
it's
certainly
more than
what they're trying to do.
it is, and it's more than just the left. They're trying to do that across the board. I
Yeah.
mean, this was kind of the goal the whole time. I mean, this was going on very strongly during the election cycle. We knew that it was
Well,
going to come back, though. I mean, this is the classic enemy. This is the
and
easiest way to perpetuate the military-industrial complex and all the profit and everything else.
they're going to bring back military conscription. They're already talking about it right now, which is worse than the draft. It's actually where that's where everyone goes. And that's because
That'll be a very popular Trump proposition right there if he tries to bring the draft back. I'm sure I see that going over really well.
well, what if one of our cities gets hit?
Well, I've openly said, if terrorist attack on American soil, another one changes everything. I mean, it will never be the same. Trump at the helm, if there's a terrorist attack on America, it's game over. We're never going to see America the way it is. And who knows? Maybe that's a good thing. I certainly don't
It's
wish
not a
for
good
large
thing.
I certainly don't wish for large numbers of people to die, but at a certain point, when there's this much ignorance and this much power consolidating control over so many different people, something's going to happen. Something's got to give. And what I posted on Facebook was the deep state is opposed to Trump. And so there's an irony here that now the deep state has to stop promoting international terrorism, which has been kind of their forte for the past 16 years. It's kind of an irony there. But because if the deep state really wants to, reduce Trump's power, they
It
would
would
have.
be really easy to, and they're kind of doing it. I mean, he has, he seemed so not friendly with Russia, but he seemed ambivalent and ready to like revive diplomatic relations with Russia at first. But then where the deep state comes in is where suddenly he takes this cold tone with Russia. Like, that's unexpected, and that's the deep state influence that people don't necessarily see or aren't aware of.
It's like, what would you rather do, Jake, fight Russia or the CIA?
I personally, is it a fist fight?
I'm talking about if you're the prez right now and you have to pick an enemy.
Apparently the enemy of the government right now are protesters and people standing in opposition to policy.
Yep, because if something homegrown actually starts building up and they have to deal with a major power and the Middle East, well, that would definitely crack the empire apart.
Yeah. All right, so what are our options? I'm not sure we're gonna get the Daily Haze on right now. I can't add him to the call, and it's distracting the shit out of me. So let's just have him call back next week. I don't know what the answer to the deep state is. But education, maybe? Can we do that? Can we get people talking about it?
Well, there's such a divisive propaganda going on right now, too, which would also be expected because people are fed up on every side of every political viewpoint or ideology. I mean, you have Trump, who promised to, like, drain the swamp and be, like, a non-establishment president, and obviously isn't holding to those promises, just like a lot of us called him out that he wouldn't do. And you have people fed up with the political system as it is in the first place because of the whole Hillary Bernie fiasco and everything else. What's going on is the state is trying to clinch down on power while it still can, and it's instilling division and propaganda between us in terms of politics and issues and everything else, because if we're divided and fighting each other, then we don't realize that even though we have differences, it's the state that's coming down on all of us.
Oh, I hear Claire.
I think we may be joined by Miko Hayes from the Daily Haze. Do we have you on the line?
Yep, I hear you guys.
Awesome. So, well, welcome to the show, first of all. Thank you for coming on. Sorry I had endless technical difficulties patching you in here. It's pretty much every show I have a nervous breakdown trying to get people to call in the right way. So we were just having a nice little luscious discussion about the deep state here. I don't know if you want to join in on that or what your general take on what's going on in the government right now. DB thinks there's a coup. I think Claire thinks there's a coup. I think there's a chicken coup. I mean, I don't know what's going on. What do you think is going on behind the scenes right now?
I guess on that subject, first off, am I censored on any of my language?
Certainly not. Fuck no.
Okay. I think it's a fucking shit mess. And I think since basically possibly a little bit before Ferguson, they started testing out things to kind of see where people's patience and anger was and all that. And then since Ferguson, we kind of hit a boiling point and people hit a different sort of disgust almost for our government. And now we've been completely overstepping our boundaries, or our government's been overstepping their boundaries to basically test new ways to make sure that we don't raise up.
Right.
And one of those is eminent domain.
And we've seen that come up with the Standing Rock. And, you know, we want to talk to you specifically about that because you have.
With eminent domain, the same people, any of the listeners, ETP that was behind the Dakota Access, Energy Transfer Partners, they are behind the Rover pipeline, natural gas pipeline. That's a $4.2 billion natural gas pipeline. They just yesterday filed for eminent domain in West Virginia. So that is starting anew. That went pretty under the radar. But just yesterday, they filed their eminent domain claims in West Virginia. I know one person in specific said that he had one house on his property that was worth $300,000, and he had another house on his property worth $150,000, and they were offering him $24,000 to go through his property and lay this pipeline. He's like, well, that sounds pretty fucking stupid. My properties are almost $500,000, and you're giving me $25,000 to reduce my property value.
Yeah, well, Trump's a big supporter of eminent domain, and it looks like he's going to try and push through whatever he can. I definitely, you know, wanted to get your take on how this connects to Standing Rock and the pipeline there. And, you know, I'd be interested to get your perspective on the newest developments there as well.
Honestly, it's all a fucking mess. It all still backtracks to HR 2029. I almost feel like a fucking record on repeat when I say this, because I've said it so many times.
HR 2029 is the one I was talking about that lifted the ban on the export of unrefined crude.
Okay.
Yes. That was a ban that was put in place in 1975 after we had a really bad oil crisis in 1973, I believe it was. That was a 40-year ban that was lifted by Charles Dent introducing HR 2029, and in specific, I believe it was Title 1 of Section 101. It might be Title 4. I've had so much information since then. It's one of the two, but it's definitely in there, and it's a very short paragraph. It's a very long rider bill that basically just pushed that through. As far as eminent domain, the Trump administration, you're getting me in kind of a hype spot right now.
Well, the ban, you said the ban, when was this ban lifted, Claire?
In December 2015 is when it passed through. It was introduced in April 2015 by Representative Charles Dent.
And Obama signed off on that.
Obama signed off on that. That was Obama administration.
It was the omnibus spending bill. It was actually included kind of as a rider, so it was buried in there.
Right. Those are the bills. They do that with the National Defense Authorization Acts too. These big omnibus bills where they slip in a bunch of nefarious shit right at the end, and it takes people months to figure out that it's even in there.
See, now, and Claire actually even found the Democrats and Republicans that were for it and against it, and even then. Just with how deep it was, because you're even talking about, for some reason, with what the bill was supposed to be, there was even internet safety and hacker bullshit in there. So I believe it's 896 pages long, and this lifting of the oil ban maybe took up a paragraph. So as far as definitions of a rider bill.
Three sentences. It was like three sentences or something ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, this is literally the epitome of a rider bill. So I wouldn't be surprised if this isn't even anything to blame, like, our people that signed off on it, because they probably didn't even know it was in there. Now, granted, it is reason to blame them because they didn't read all the papers. But I think out of 896 papers, I believe it was on, like, page 771. Don't quote me on that number, but it's very deep embedded in it.
It seems like there should be, like, it's like with small print on a contract. It's illegal to slip something in, like, on page 6, I get to keep your firstborn son. You know, it's illegal to do something like that. It seems like it should be the same thing with these government bills. Shouldn't we be able to backtrack and be like, wait, what the fuck? What was that? And renegotiate something like that?
But at the same time, these guys are paid to fucking read these papers. So
True.
Instead of who proposed it should be more of why didn't you assholes read this whole fucking bill.
I'll tell you why, though. Part of it, but I'm not sure if I made clear in the article I did, part of it was that they were not given much time. They were given an extremely short period of time to read this nearly 1,000 page bill, and that for, you know, the lifting of the ban on crude oil was that was huge, but that was not the only huge thing in this bill. There were several measures that were very, like, groundbreaking and earth changing. So it was basically this bill that was chock full of all these controversial things that would not have passed on their own.
Well, and that's also where human nature has to be taken into consideration. I mean, you know, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but if you're reading 1,000 pages of just boring bullshit, I get it. I get how you get to the point of, like, around page 300, you're just kind of skimming through it. I get that. Like, I wish it wasn't like that, but it's human nature. And so they placed it very well. It was a very, very well-placed writer, Bill.
Right. So, and so, you know, I kind of vaguely understand it, you know, but I, you know, how is this going to, moving forward, what is this going to allow for? It's obviously already allowing for these pipelines to take, you know, special precedence over everything. How should we expect to continue to see the ramifications of this omnibus?
Well, I mean, you're seeing it right now. Right. It just opened up our country to drilling us out for foreign gain. Even Dakota Access backed up on their original promise, saying that all this oil was for America. It's going to help America. Blah blah fucking blah.
Seems like then, Trump would be against that, since he's all America first, right? Shouldn't he be all over that?
Oh, you would think that. And here, I'll give you a good Keystone thing, because this is my new buddy. But now, if you look at the latest statements from Dakota Access, they say that the pipeline works as a quote-unquote FedEx, and they can't guarantee what their recipients are going to do once they receive their oil. So basically they're saying, we don't fucking know. Y'all are fucked. They're going to sell it off.
They're saying as long as we get our profits, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Now, as far as the future, this is a fun thing. My new homeboy, which actually I wrote up a pretty long article on him, and then it actually got deleted just the other week, and I'm getting ready to do another one. Roman Abramovich. That's a name people should know. That's my... It's my homeboy over in Russia. Turns out Roman's very wealthy. He's deep in the oil, like global oil industry. He actually helped Putin launch his presidential campaign. And then aside from launching the campaign, he actually helped him pick his cabinet and his political party. So this guy's pretty important over in Russia. Mm-hmm. Ivanka Trump actually invited his wife to the presidential inauguration for Trump. So close ties to Trump and Russia, or and Putin. He also owns a company called Esraz, which produces steel. And when Keystone XL, before it failed, a lot of people gave them shit because before they got their permission to do everything, they ordered 40% of all the steel they needed for the pipeline, which came from Esraz, but it came from their Canadian steel mill. Roman, my buddy boy Roman, he owns 41% of that company. So mm-hmm. Trump is, which also Esraz did say they would stand with Keystone XL no matter what happened. They would stand by their side and they would continue to fight for this pipeline to go through. So Trump made this deal that mm-hmm. American pipelines had to be made with American steel, and he's going to basically hold up to that, at least with the Keystone XL, because it turns out that Esraz actually has 3 steel mills in America. So even though Keystone XL isn't going to be able to use the steel they got from this company from Canada, it still goes back to the same pocketbooks, and you're still talking about foreign investors making money before the pipeline even gets in the ground and before we even talk about who's invested in the oil.
And this is the crazy thing too. Like, I think that people just assume that sales of these huge infrastructure projects are just typical sales. Like, money changes hands, perhaps backdoor money changes hands, and that's it. And it's not at all the case. There is so much wrangling to make sure that the most beneficial possible policy can come from these deals. I mean, we're talking billions of dollars. This pipeline was always intended to export the oil for the profit of the companies who use the pipeline and ETP who constructed it. I mean, this isn't just some sort of, this is not going to create jobs. This is not going to do anything for the U.S. This is not going to do anything for our economy or anything else. The only thing that will come of Dakota Access will be profit for the companies who use the pipeline and the company who constructed it. That's essentially it.
And only for the next few decades too, because petroleum power, we're trending towards green energy right now, and we're running out of oil. So, you know, like the cigarette industry, you know, getting the last few generations addicted to cigarettes before that's obsolete. It seems like the oil company is just bilking the last few, you know, trillions of dollars out of this, and at the detriment of people. And it's so nefarious and disgusting that and everyone knows it, but somehow the government keeps allowing these people to come in, and this is where, you know, this is the deep state. They're interconnected and they're helping each other out. They're scratching each other's backs, and it's just disgusting.
That's one problem, though. Everyone doesn't know it. One of the biggest problems I saw, and I spent many months in Standing Rock. Everyone doesn't, and even these people are leading up the bank divest. I mean, granted, that's beautiful. It does help, but there's a good chance that the bank divest people, the guys heading this up, this thing that has taken away millions of dollars from this pipeline, don't know about HR 2029. They don't know about the 13 foreign countries that are actually deeply invested in this pipeline. And that's a really big problem. Like,
yeah, I'm willing to bet not a single person I know outside of the anti-media network. Most of my friends are, you know, just kind of left-wing DNC cheerleaders, and I'm willing to bet not a single one of them knows about it. And yeah, that's a huge problem. And that's also media distracting us from these issues. Why isn't the media reporting on this stuff? I mean, why does it take the alternative media? You know, obviously the corporate media is a part of it.
Because there are agendas. This is the thing. I mean, the corporate media is beholden to whatever the corporate interests are.
Right.
So when the corporate interests are ultimately tied to big oil in some way, they are not going to report the facts of the case. I was with Nico in Standing Rock when the first blizzard of the year hit, and we watched CNN pull up in their satellite truck all cocky, and this guy, I mean, we're like, oh my God, where have you been? You know, it's been months. It's December 4th or 5th or 6th or something. Yeah, I mean, this guy pulls up all cocky, and he's like, he was like, what do you mean, where have we been? We've been here all week. And there was a group of us that were just like, done. I mean, corporate media has lost their legitimacy ages ago. And Standing Rock is some of the best proof of that.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the alt-right and Trump are making it uncool to know that, you know, because they have their own CNN sucks hashtag, except they're coming at it from this, you know, warped alt-universe perspective, and it's detracting from what was a really legitimate momentum we had going against corporate media. Unfortunately, now it's you know, now when you say CNN sucks, you think you're talking from Trump's point of view.
Now it's popular to be part of the war against them. I mean, I don't know. I think that's why, like with the Daily Haze, we just try and keep our head down and just let shit out. I mean, honestly, at this point, I don't want anything to do with this fucking media battle, because at this point, calling anybody out, you almost look worse than not calling people out. I mean, it's become just a shit show all around.
Yeah.
And you know, the one thing that's more dangerous than, and this goes for elections too, people that elect that don't know what the fuck they're electing, like, just stay home. You're less dangerous to just stay home. And that goes for the same as media. This misinformation is worse than no information could ever be.
I agree.
no valid information is what we're going to get if the populace continues taking up this whole fake news narrative and continues believing that it's true. Because honestly, wouldn't it be better to have a bunch of fake news and tabloid sites and even clickbait sites out there than to not have available to you upon search valid, decent information with integrity that stands up to the truth? I mean, corporate media puts out fake stories. They put out, you know, good stories and valid stories. Alternative media tries to take up the slack and report things, whether biased or not. They try to report things as they are. And corporate media became obsolete when it went for vagary and neutrality over the integrity of the news item itself.
Right. Interesting. Yeah, that's I never thought of neutrality like that. I mean, I don't know if I would consider it neutrality when they're clearly, you know, they're omitting information because that's, you know, the memo that they got from up above said to downplay a certain issue or to not mention it at all. You know, I think omission is it a sin of omission or a sin of commission? I don't know. It's one of those two, but.
Censorship.
I feel like every media agency has its bias. I don't think there is a way to report neutral. Honestly, I don't.
Right.
I know even with the Daily Haze, we don't report neutral, and I've told people that. But what we do is we do normally have, and it's not even normally, we don't release something without the proof behind it. So if you can prove us wrong, then we'll take it down. And
that's true of most of alternative media too. Like there are 100%. Some bunk outlets, but alternative media is so much better than mainstream for doing
mainstream that. Media has pushed it to a different level though, where like we just yell it out for the stats real quick, for the fucking views. Let's just yell it out.
Hey, we're running up against the end here. Miko, thanks so much for sticking with it, going in. Great time. On, I really appreciate you.
Oh, I can't hear you for shit, but thank you.
And always, as always, DB and Claire, thank you for joining us. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo.
The Anti-Media Radio, your host Nick Burnby here on UCY.